And we're off and running with the masked Patriot. First look at him going against Coco Ware. And Coco kind of going at it. Woo! Boy, he is pounding and swinging. Good night.
From Television City in Hollywood.
The following wrestling exhibition requires discretionary viewer participation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 40th edition GFA Live. I am your host, Peter Winston. And for a special occasion like the 40th show, once again, I'm going to waste no time bringing in my guest at this time, a man who undoubtedly runs on Duncan, Mr. Keithy Langston. How are you?
Oh, you bet you bippy I do, Pete.
Well, you told me you went to Duncan at 9 when I had to delay recording because I was having pancakes.
Yes, you were having pancakes and I was getting some Dunkin' Donuts. I needed my Dunkin'. So, you know, it's an important thing for any true New England fan to get Dunkin's. As you can tell, I got my iced coffee. I'm good to go.
We talk about the hyper local references all the time because Dunkin' is everywhere now. So in order to make it really hyper local, it would be like, yeah, and after I went to Duncan, I went over to Watertown Ford to get my car serviced. you don't even have a Ford, do you?
I don't have a – no, I would never buy a Ford. What am I – how did you know about Watertown Ford?
I was talking to my friend Merrill yesterday, and he said if you can't go to Stoneham Ford, go to Watertown Ford because it's the same family. I don't know. I'm interested in a Ford Bronco Sport. What do you think about that?
Look out! I think it's a good idea for you to get a Ford Bronco.
Yeah, I'm going to get a white Bronco, and you're going to be in the driver's seat, and I'm going to be back, and we're just going to cruise the freeway.
And I would just say, I see OJ, and he looks scared.
I got PETA in the car.
Actually, I would say, like, we got Roddy in the car. We're chasing after Goldust.
You know what? I hated that when I first saw it. I was like, oh my God.
But I loved it.
But then it grew on me after a while. It's just so stupid that it's incredible. But that's WWF WrestleMania 12. Today we're doing something very, very different, a departure from what we've done in the past.
Okay.
And it is CWA Memphis Wrestling from February 1st, 1986.
Oh.
Yeah. And this is this one's going to be interesting because my notes for this one, I learned an important lesson about Samsung Notes application on my phone, which is you can't paste.
No.
You can paste text into it, but if you try to print it, apparently you're going to get something with a shit ton of wingdings in it, and it's going to be an approximately 48-point font. It's basically like war is over here, like victory over Japan. Like we're talking that kind of
Dewey defeat Truman.
Yes. As a I should just take a picture of me holding up these notes for this
with that shit eating grin on your face.
Yeah. I see like a bunch of question marks and a black diamond.
Yes.
that weird OE thing that where like O and the E are joined together.
Or if you can do a picture where you're, like, leaning your wife back, kissing her, like that, you know, infamous nurse and sailor kiss, and then you can just put the windings above it.
Oh, no, she's not going to stand for that shit. So let's just move along.
Let's roll right in.
You know, we had a couple requests for Memphis Wrestling for us to look at. Now, before I hit play, what is your, like, have you watched a lot of Memphis on YouTube, or is it just something, you know, more spotty or kind of in clips?
I mean, I would say it's probably spotty or clips at best. I mean, I would definitely check out, usually if I hear on a podcast such as the award-winning Greetings from Allentown, if I hear anything where it starts to pique my interest, or if I'm reading up something about a particular character or a particular wrestler that I want to see some additional stuff, I will go to Memphis. I will say that during my youth, when I was reading the PWI and Inside Wrestling I was always very interested in the Memphis territory because they wrote a lot about Memphis back then.
Yep.
But at that point, it wasn't Memphis anymore. It wasn't CWA. It was
USWA.
Yeah, USWA. But I was always interested, which is why I didn't hate Jeff Jarrett right off the bat. Because, I mean, Jeff Jarrett was a pretty big deal back then.
You were brainwashed by Bill Apter to love Jeff Jarrett.
and Bill Apter brainwashed me to love Jarrett. He loved me to love Lawler. He brainwashed me to love Brian Christopher.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And even the Gilbert brothers, you know.
Rest in peace. It has occurred to me, because, of course, this weekend is tomorrow, Monday, is Martin Luther King Day here in the United States. And it occurred to me that, oh, geez, Dr. King was assassinated in Memphis. And I'm doing a Memphis show this week. It's like, I don't know if it was me smoking weed the other day that really made me.
Well, I would say like, we'd be.
Why am I doing this?
I'd say we would be in trouble if it was early morning, April 4, that we decided to watch a Memphis show.
Well, instead, this is February 1. This is only 5 days after the Challenger blew up. So apparently, you know, it was a nation in mourning. Hey, don't laugh. Don't laugh, man. Come on. I used to go jogging around Krista McAuliffe Elementary School right here in nearby Lowell, Massachusetts.
I didn't mean to laugh at the
joke. don't worry. I'll edit it out with my usual crack edit job that I do on this program.
which means that won't happen. So everyone's going to hear me laughing about the Challenger exploding.
Well, it was me bringing it up that was the funny point. You were not laughing at the Challenger exploding. It's the fact that I randomly bring it up in context of this wrestling show.
Oh, hey now.
I had that a little hot. The Memphis intro is a little different at this time. You got like four screens going on.
And I like that it's kind of like a 70s porn version of Flair's is also thus far. Zarpatra.
Yes. Have you ever seen those porn movies where there's like four different porns going on the screen? Yeah.
Yeah.
I make it no secret that I love Lance Russell. He is so good at this. He looks so debonair. He's got like a three-piece suit on.
His hair is nicely coiffed, I might add, too.
Oh, yeah. Lance Russell definitely... He had a good hair guy, I'll say that.
This is about as 80s as you're going to get right now. This is the definition of Ronald Reagan's Reaganomics era 80s.
I like the background, too. It kind of looks like the walls of Miyagi's dojo or something.
With this like big poster behind of looks like Zeus throwing a lightning bolt at like maybe Hercules. Yeah, coming at ya.
Yeah, here are the Fantastics. They got to make out with every chick in the front row.
Yeah, WNBC. Yeah.
it's so funny how open it is. I mean, yeah, it's studio wrestling, but there's no barricade between where the fans are and where the ring is.
Oh.
This is Tony Falk. He is 0-37, and he's promising he's going to pick up a win now.
Boy, I underestimated my opponent a little bit. Things didn't turn out the way I planned. But let me tell you, that's not going to happen again because I've been training real hard, and I know what I can do now. So the Fantastics are going to get beat right here today. I've wrestled them before, and I know what they do wrong. And I got a partner right here today, and we will beat the Fantastics.
Tony, I was going to do this a little later in the show, but this just is as good a time as any. I did a little research in there on your record, and I thought it might be interesting to run down the Tony Falk record at this point. As we know, it is not the best in the business, but you can see it right on the screen. Tony Falk,
yeah, it says 0-37.
You know what
screen.
I gotta say? For a jobber, he's got like a nice robe.
Yeah, he does. Also, losses is spelled wrong on the screen.
Loses.
You know what my eye is kind of drawn to here is Dave Brown just kind of rolling his eyes. Like he's sitting at the desk. He's like, look at this motherfucker.
He's got that look on his face as if I can't believe I got to put up with this shit again.
Like, there's a low pressure system blowing in. Come on, I like Dave Brown as well. I mean, they're such an outstanding team. Oh. So the Fantastics are more of a copy, I think, of the Fabulous Ones than they are of the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
Although in ring, I think they're more like the Rock and Roll Express, like the way that they actually wrestle.
Oh, the Southern Tag Team titles.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're not going to be defending the Northern Tag Team titles in Memphis, are they? Come on.
I guess not.
Tony Fox, tag team partner is Keith Eric. I know one of your favorites.
Yeah, one of the all-time favorites here in Memphis.
Yeah, it's Keith Eric. It's not Keith Von Eric, so there's not less of a chance that he's going to just drop dead during the match here.
Ohio.
Yeah, I know. Bit of a Von Erich's cheap shot. I want to say this is around the time. No, actually, it's not. Never mind. I was going to say that the tragedy in World Class at this point was Gino Hernandez dying, and I think it actually was around the time. It was a dark side of the ring on that.
That was a tragedy.
Yeah. Would have been interesting to see where Gino would have gone if he got just get out of World Class and go to one of the bigger territories. So the Fantastics have decided to, you know, just go back out to ringside and shake hands with the fans again.
They're friggin' playing some grab ass with the fans out there in the crowd. They're kissing
no
hands and shaking
there.
Babies.
Ain't no empty seats there. Did you notice that, though?
No. Jammed into the rafters here in...
Yeah. At the WMC Studios in Memphis. To close the book on Gino Hernandez, he actually died the day after this, February 2nd, 1986. So, I'm not sure how I ended up bringing that up in a Memphis show, considering that he was a world class guy. But
a dark day in WCCW. So
yeah, well, don't worry, there was plenty more of those to come.
Plenty more where those came from. and a beautiful drop kick and an arm drag.
Tony Falk is getting his butt kicked right now by the Fantastics.
I think for 1 week we should definitely try to just do play-by-play in color for every match that we watch. Like, try to go as legit as possible.
Well, another way to do it, and I thought about doing this for the main podcast, is I do a complete kayfabe show where everything is done according to the kayfabe at the time.
I think, like, that would be glorious. That's your friggin' April Fool's show for this year.
I had an idea for a whole podcast centered around where you just maintain kayfabe the entire time, like as if everything is real and all that. But I think that it would wear thin after about 10 episodes.
It'd be awesome if you could do like a kayfabe, like do a kayfabe interview segment where like you interview people today's day, but they're still holding kayfabe, like. You know, interview Sheiky Baby, and he's still, well, Sheiky Baby still holds kayfabe, but
he's dead. He's dead, Keith. He's been dead for 2 years. He's being run by like animatronics at this point.
I refuse to believe that. He's alive and well.
Well, I don't know about well. I don't think he's been well since like 85.
There's still a debate as whether or not he's alive.
Yeah, I'm starting the Iron Sheik conspiracy theory that he actually died in 2018.
Okay. Well,
right. He was also replaced by Judith Light.
Oh, well, now it's good to see Judith Light getting a lot of work.
Yeah. Boy, that was a long time ago in this podcast where we brought up Judith Light being the Ultimate Warrior, huh?
I think it's time we bring it back.
Yeah.
So the AWA Southern Tag Team Championship.
Yes.
Longtime Tag Team Championship. Looks like the lineage goes all the way back to 1945.
Indeed it does, yeah. Now my question is, how many times did Lawler capture the tag team titles? I know he is 364-time Southern Heavyweight Champion. For which I have no problem with, because the whole way that they did things in Memphis worked. That's why it lasted longer than other places.
Yeah. You know, what's really funny is there's a tag team called the Heavenly Bodies, which is Al Green and Don Green. And they were tag team several times in the early 1970s, it looks like. And when I was scrolling through looking, I was like, the Heavenly Bodies?
Yeah.
That
definitely got reused, the same as like Hollywood Blondes, you know.
Mm. Oh, do you know that the Kevin important thing Sullivan is that
you don't call
there?
Them the new heavenly bodies, because that would kill them immediately.
But if you call them Heavenly Bodies Jr., I think it would be okay.
There's a certain spark missing from this Fantastics match that I can't really put my finger on. Like, I'm just maybe it's just the whole Tony Falk interview about his record and how he's definitely going to get a win, but now I'm just waiting to see who eats the pin. I'd have to imagine that it's Keith Eric, though.
No, I think it's gonna be Tony Hawk. Is that his name?
Tony Falk.
Oh. Oh, Tony Falk. Okay, Peter Falk's son, right?
Yeah. One,
my father's Columbo.
So Keith Eric just kicked out of a double underhook suplex. I thought that was gonna be it. I mean, we're
like
9 minutes.
Warrior WrestleMania 12.
We're at 9 minutes into this video. I can't believe that this match has gone on this long. It's kind of insane, if you ask me. There's still quite a bit to get to here, and I'm looking forward to introducing you to some of the characters. But what we're mainly here for is, yes, everybody, this is the show where Coco Beware annihilates the Masked Patriot in a way that is legendary, and Keithy has never seen that match. So that's
never.
That's why we're here.
That's the hook on this.
I mean, I don't know. I have no problem with the Fantastics, but do we really need a 14-minute squash match here?
Just to let you know, Jerry Lawler won this tag team championship 10 times.
Okay.
Once with Jimmy Valiant, once 3 times with Bill Dundee, once with the Mongolian Stomper, once with Joe LeDuc.
Yep.
Once with Austin Idol, once with Plowboy Frazier, and once with Big Bubba.
Plowboy Frazier is Uncle Elmer, by the way.
Yeah, and Big Bubba is the one and only Tugboat.
Indeed, I think it is, yeah.
Uncle Fred.
The Fantastics, they updated Tony Falk's record to 0-38, and the finish was each of the two Fantastics cradled Eric and Falk. And they both ate the pin at the same time, and the referee counted it with both hands. That's always amusing. Nice. But the referee is counting 2 pinfalls at once.
I like that Tony Falk's 38 losses kept blinking on the screen, like just to drive home the fact that this motherfucker lost 38 matches.
Well,
holy
there.
Shit.
Yeah, that is.
Who's this? Bill
Dundee, Rick Casey, and Nature Boy. I'm trying to remember. This is not Michael St. John. It doesn't matter who it is because he's got a giant black helmet like he's Darth Vader. Oh, wait, that's his hair. Wednesday night in Evansville, you will see a wow. Card, including Southern Tag Title, Fantastic. To your point about the 38 flashing on screen there, the little Chiron graphic looked exactly like NBC Sports' graphics at the time. Just feel like I should point that out.
Is that Dirty Dutch Mantel?
Yep, and Bill Dundee, who's basically the El Jefe, because Jerry Lawler is out of the picture at the moment. So let's hear what he says.
You can't remember him. Yeah, then there was another one come along. His name was Steve Curran. He's gone. Now, Austin Idol, he's taking up the challenge. Everybody wants to be the King of the Hill. Wrong, Daddy. There's only 3 Kings of the Hill here, Daddy. The Dutchman, the Nature Boy, and the Superstar. Idol, you don't have what it takes. The Patriots thought they would have taken the Bears. They didn't have it, Jack. They run all over them 44-3, Daddy. And that's what's going to happen right here in Evansville.
He just quoted the wrong score for the Super Bowl. Come on, motherfucker. It was 46-10. It was much closer than 44-3.
Like Casey. Two of them, and you throw in Dirty Rhodes, and that's what's worse than one. It's two together.
We got it down to 44-10 in the fourth quarter. We.
Garbage time. We. You were on the field?
Watch real close. Watch yeah. The TV, because I'm going to show you people what happens.
It's kind of funny to see Zeb Coulter hanging out with an immigrant like Bill Dundee. Oh, I'm sorry. Is he one of the real Americans like Cesaro?
And he's not screaming about, you know, immigration.
Remember when they brought back Dutch Mantel in the Zeb Coulter character and he was in the wheelchair and then he's like, here's Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah.
Remember that? It was like October 2015. And then he comes down and beats Cena clean in 10 minutes. It was the stupidest fucking thing of all time.
Casey and Dirty Rhodes getting together. Casey was team
Dirty Rhodes.
Yeah, he basically is a guy who looks like Dusty Rhodes.
And I know.
He's the off spec.
I just like Dirty Rhodes. Like, that's just the good. That's a great name.
It is. I mean, I fully. Right now, they're showing highlights of the Mid-South Coliseum show from the previous Monday, which is Coco Ware and Rick Casey versus the Sheepherders. But Dirty Rhodes, Bill Dundee, Buddy Landell, Dutch Mantel are all going to interfere. And then, well, we'll see what happens. But look at Coco.
The Sheepherders.
Yes.
Not the Bushwhacker Sheepherders.
Indeed it is. But
who's that in the ring?
That's probably Jonathan Boyd, or it might be. Might be Jonathan Boyd. Dundee and Coco Beware, I want to say, had a scaffold match at some point. Yeah, there's Dirty Rhodes. He's got a big elbow pad on.
Yep.
He does not have any splotches, though.
Ooh, baby. Oh, no.
Oh, no, that was Casey. Excuse me. That was Rick Casey. I don't know. Apparently, there are a lot of fat dudes with blonde hair and a giant elbow pad. I'm telling you, my notes here are pretty wild. I'm gonna have to post it.
That's Buddy Landell, though, right? On the outside with the blonde hair. Yeah.
And at this point in Memphis, I alluded to this on the like June of '86 Memphis show. Like at the beginning of the year, they kind of had Dundee and Landell were running roughshod over everything in Memphis, and it was kind of a interesting time because Lawler's out of the picture, and they were very entertaining together. But this is quite the beatdown going on here.
Yeah. Why was Lawler out of the picture? Was this when he was like the AWA champ?
He had lost a loser leave town to Dundee.
Oh, okay.
But he is gonna get mentioned a little bit later on in a segment that comes up and features a cameo from a certain wrestling personality that people would come to know a lot later.
Oh.
Yeah.
I look forward to that.
Do you like the way that they ring the bell?
They're ringing it like it's a friggin' dinner bell.
Yeah. The Green Line is pulling into Park Street Station. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. This train doesn't go all the way to Leechmere. All right. There's our hyperlocal reference.
That's another hyperlocal. If anybody wants to know, whenever that would ring, it would just go, and then you'd go, it would be the bell, and then it would say,
yeah.
Oh, I guess I'm at North Station now.
Was that wild, huh?
Yeah.
Good. Night, it was something else.
Hey, we got some action and coming in right now. Rick Casey and Dirty Rhodes getting ready for our next.
It'll be one fall, 15-minute time limit. Introducing from parts unknown at a total weight of 458 pounds, the Invaders. And going against them at 527 pounds total weight. From Austin, Texas, Dirty Rhodes, and his partner from San Antonio, Texas, Rick Casey.
Oh, no, I was right. That was Dirty Rhodes.
That's a riot that he's from fucking Austin, Texas, and he's got the fucking cowboy. He really is an off-spec Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. It's like when your town has the Halloween parade and they want to have Disney characters, so they have a Mickey Mouse that looks just enough not like Mickey Mouse, but you can definitely identify what it is.
His name is Mackie Mouse?
Something like that, yeah. And I think I've brought that up more than once because that was a real thing that happened at the Woburn Halloween parade like 6 years ago. The off-specs, kind of scary Mickey Mouse.
Hey, kids, I am... What's he say, Clumpy the Clown?
Rusty the Clown.
Rusty the Clown. Does Dirty Rhodes do, like, the boogie-woogie in that, like, Dusty would do, or no?
Oh, he does just about everything that Dusty would do, but he doesn't have the splotches.
Serious? Oh, God.
He doesn't have knee pads on.
No. I don't know. I know Dusty was fat, but Dusty never seemed to like his weight never seemed to make him look like just gross fat. This guy's like gross fat.
All right. Now that you've said that, I would like you to seek out and watch Dusty Rhodes at the WCW New Japan Super Show in 1992 and then tell me that Dusty Rhodes never looked overly fat. It was pretty bad. It was a serious issue.
Was it one of the last times Dusty would wear just his trunks?
I think so. Yeah, I think he was teaming with Dustin, and I forget, but I just remember listening to a review of that show. Oh, back elbow. Yes.
Oh, he picked him up by the mask. A face mask. Where's the flag?
15-yard penalty. This feels so different for us that we're watching a bunch of squash matches here, because we've been watching named guys going against each other for so long on those Coliseum videos.
Yeah, but most of those were squash matches anyway.
Well, I don't know about that. How about every time Tito would lose to Mr. Perfect? we only saw that one like four times.
We only saw that. I spent a week there one night.
Like Tito was facing Mr. Perfect, but it was during that era where the genius was outside the ring. And then Tito lost the match because when he was going for the flying forearm, genius got up on the apron and pulled open his academic robe and showed his dick. And Tito got rolled up from behind.
Because if there's one thing that's going to make you surprised, it's going to be Lanny Poplo's dick.
Yes.
That's it. That's it, folks.
But no way. Rick had that head of steam up there, and he busted him down, got the 1-2-3, and came out with the victory in there. Kind of an interesting behind-the-scenes thing that's been taking place.
I'm going to need Lance to explain this for me, because there's a ton of notes on this.
And a lot of other words you could use to describe him. He's vindictive, too. He won the loser leave town with Lawler.
Right.
And he not only is not satisfied that Lawler is no longer wrestling in the area, he didn't want him to breathe, I think. He got an injunction to keep him from appearing in any kind of thing. You lose the loser leave town, that means you can't be anything. In addition to that, to where he could not sell, not he, but the company that that markets the Jerry Lawler cassette,
the video cassette.
Independent media, and he got an injunction where that when you lose, stay out. So he looks, don't look at me. They felt the same way. Not only that, it was their money invested in the marketing. So
Memphis wrestling turned into a legal program so gradually, I didn't even notice.
Well, we've got an interesting piece I want you to see right here.
It's funny. They took
the courthouse steps were just moments
ago. Look at this. It's like a news report.
All sales of the Jerry Lawler video was lifted. Attorneys for Dundee argued that Jerry Lawler's agreement to a loser leave town match and his subsequent losing extended to the selling of anything connected to the king, namely the Jerry Lawler video. The tension-filled courtroom was packed with wrestling notables, including ranking members from the commissioner's office. During the court proceedings, the judge repeatedly slammed his gavel down, threatening to clear the courtroom if the attorneys for Dundee could not control their client's outbursts and unruliness.
I'm sorry, I have to pause this for a second. This is so awesome that they have this guy who clearly has not spoken in front of a camera very much. And it's like an actual television report. Like, we are outside the courthouse where I'm reporting on this bullshit thing over an injunction over sales of a videotape. God, I love Memphis so much.
It sounds to me like Bill Dundee's lawyer might have been Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, God.
He's arguing the legitimacy of a loser leaves town match.
Rudy.
I'm Bill Dundee, and I think that if Jerry Lawler lost the loser leaves town match, that I should be president of the United States.
And
the judge
God.
Is banging. He says the judge kept banging the gavel. Like, he's freaking...
there's this wrestling bullshit trial going on in this courthouse, and like the judge, he got roped into this somehow.
All rise, Judge Chamberlain Holler.
Yeah, the judge got assigned that one because he had like a DUI, and this is like his community service. You have to preside as judge over this. All right, we got to hear what
great.
This.
It would have been great if they cut into the courtroom and like the Undertaker is the judge and JBL is the prosecuting attorney.
well, let's see what this sophomore in college level broadcast journalist, where he's going with this.
Okay.
The cassette distributor successfully contended that Jerry losing and leaving town is one thing, but Dundee cannot force the memory of Jerry Lawler to leave as well. The Jerry Lawler video serves that right. Here with me now is John J. Berzichelli, Chief Executive Officer of the cassette distributors. Mr. Berzichelli, a happy moment for you today.
I have to say that we're absolutely delighted with the outcome, judge's decision. It was a very lengthy battle, expensive one, but we were under mandate to do it. And also like to formally announce that the video cassette is being shipped as of today, and again available to wrestling fans and Jerry Lawler fans across the country.
Thank you,
Mr. President Kelly. I'm sure that's very good news for wrestling fans throughout the country. And I have with me Mr. Dennis Carluzzo, representative attorney.
Yes, Dennis Carluzzo, intrepid wrestling promoter of the 90s, yes.
Dundee is the new king of professional wrestling. Long live the new king. This is not going to end here. My associate and myself intend to appeal this, and that's all we have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Carluzzo. Well, there you have it. I'm sure this
his tie was a little short.
This is Dominic D on special assignment, the courthouse.
They missed the chance. They missed the chance for Bill Dundee to come out and go, "I'm the king. I'm the king of Memphis, Tennessee."
Sometimes I look at Dundee and all I see is the fella who used to hang out with Lord Stephen Regal. What was it? Oh, Sir William. Excuse me. For some reason I was blanking. It's been a while since I've watched that era of WCW. I haven't really done that much lately.
Let's take a look. This is exactly what they're talking about.
Oh, so now we're going to get a promo for the Lawler cassette.
To talk about an outstanding new video that you may want to add to your collection. This one is called Jerry the King Lawler, Wrestling's Royalty, Volume 1 of the Collector Series. Now, in this tape,
I'm interested.
You're going to find all of the great highlights of the outstanding life and career of Jerry Lawler. And, sir, it's available right now. I'd make it a point. Don't procrastinate. That is
$29.95 plus $5.25 postage.
Ooh, there's a toll-free number. Should I call that toll-free number on the radio right now?
Go right ahead. I want to see. All right. It's 1-800-524-2507.
All right. 524-2507. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for calling. Are you or someone in your house 55 years of age or older? Press
Walrus.
If you or someone in your house is 55 years of age or older, otherwise press 0.
All right.
Well. So it's good to see they repurpose that number. Lawler is. It'd be great if I didn't push. I'm not 55 or older, so I didn't want to push anything.
Lawler's 71 right now, so yeah, he clearly fits the bill.
Wow! Allow 4 to 6 weeks for delivery. P.O. Box 3020, Cherry Hill, New Jersey 08034. Yeah.
What's funny is Cherry Hill, New Jersey, in the state of New Jersey. I would associate that more with Dennis Carluzzo because that's where he did his promoting. 4 to 6 weeks for delivery. Glad to see we're acting on this quickly. Of course, now.
Well,
now
I mean, I know, right?
You can watch whatever wrestling on demand pretty much. But back in those days, you had to wait 4 to 6 weeks for this Lawler video where he throws fire a couple times.
I mean, it would have been I wonder why WWE hasn't put that on the network yet.
I think it's because they don't own the rights.
Oh, they have to get them from Dennis Carluzzo.
Well, no, it's all of the Memphis wrestling rights are like in this murky territory that I don't quite understand. But frankly, I'm fine with because I am perfectly content with. There's a lot of Memphis that's on Amazon Prime. For those of you out there who don't know that, and I'm not just talking like the 90s USWA, I think there's some older Memphis on there as well.
Well, it was funny when you said that there was in this murky territory that you don't really understand. I was going to go, Memphis.
Yeah. Don't forget, they went to other cities like Evansville, Indiana.
Evansville, Indiana.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, Indiana has given us so little.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, Larry Bird. Larry Bird, but, you know, other than that, from New Jersey to Parks and Rec was set in Indiana. Yeah, okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You've been to Memphis, correct?
I've only driven through Memphis. I drove through Memphis when I was moving from Virginia to Vegas. So that was 2003.
Where was it that you went for your father-in-law's like surprise party?
Oh, that was Nashville.
Nashville. Okay.
Memphis, of course, is to the far the western border because you know West Memphis, Arkansas.
Oh. Don't
you know what I think? If we do another Memphis show, we got to do one with Sid on there as Lord Humongous.
in Evansville. Listen to this great talk to you. You will see Tojo
Yamamoto. I can't talk normally because I am wearing a Jason Hockey mask over my mouth.
I just want Sid to come out there and go, I would like to talk to Tom.
Sid is a never-ending source of amusement.
for maybe just us.
Oh no, I think it's for all.
Are in the research and business on Tony Falk,
research on from wherever he damn well pleases.
Sid Vicious.
So much
El Gigante.
So much better than West Memphis, Arkansas. Just wherever the hell he damn well pleases.
Rick Flair. Let's take a look at this as a matter of history.
So now we're going to see some highlights of the Coco Ware feud with Bill Dundee.
Okay.
Okay, let me get this straight now. You put this belt on the line.
Flair's coming to town, and they're doing the usual bickering over who gets the NWA shot.
We can beat him, Kate.
Eddie Marlin.
Knocked down by Dundee as he was shoved into Coco Ware.
We got Coco and Dundee in the ring, and you got a bunch of stuff going on outside.
Dundee and Hickerson battling on the floor. Here's Jerry Jarrett. Dundee on the rope. Jarrett shaking the rope.
Oh, ooh. Jesus.
Yeah, Dundee didn't do the usual get crotched on the top rope deal.
That's a fast count. That was a very fast count.
To be fair, though, he did count to four. Now that's definitely the Mid-South Coliseum. Apparently, we have a ref out of here, too.
Dundee comes roaring in, throws powder in Dusty Rhodes' eyes.
This is right in the middle of the Ric Flair Coco Ware match.
Yeah, oh, Flair and Coco. So they protect Coco because he had his foot on the rope as Flair was pinning him.
14 seconds, being distracted by Dundee.
I love these Flair appearances where he comes into a territory and, like, the dudes who are already there help Flair. And then Flair's like, all right, well, I'm out of here. Thank you.
There are no honor among thieves.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had a... Oh, no, we do have a Dirty Rhodes promo coming up a little bit later. So you get that to look forward to.
That's Sabu.
I don't know who that is.
And I got me a whole bag full of money. And I'm going to share it with all you rednecks.
You're going to share some of your money?
Right here. This is full of gold coins, brother. And I'm going to share it with all you rednecks.
It's Mikey's marble bag from the Goonies. And it's my marble bag. The Fratellis forgot to check it.
I guess we know where Adrian Adonis's leather jacket went.
Yeah, I don't like Dundee's leather jacket. Coco is
why
dressed...
is that? Ooh. Why is Coco Beware wearing a Santa outfit?
Because he's all man.
Are we supposed to be selling the thing now that Santa is a black man from Memphis?
Hey. Fine with that. If it's Coco Beware, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Sure.
There's a lot of history here, apparently.
Yeah.
And I believe that is Coco and Landell. Coco is the champion at this point. Landell is challenging. Ooh, nice little interference by Dundee just floating through the ring as the referee has his head down and he's kind of knocked out. Oh, they did the Flair beating Savage finish where the figure four into a pin.
That referee, Earl Hebner or something? I mean, good Lord. He's knocked out and then he just gets dragged over and he just makes the count.
Yeah. All right. I just did pause here at 29:28 in the video.
Okay.
So there's always been a lot of talk with this match, Coco Ware versus the Masked Patriot, in what happened. Did the Masked Patriot say something? Did he say something racial to Coco and just set him off? I kind of tend to think that maybe Coco came out with more intensity because they told him, hey, right before this, we're going to be airing this thing of how you've been screwed over by Dundee, Landell, and all these other guys. So, okay, you know, bring the intensity for this match and okay, the poor man's Patriot. Okay, so you've never seen this before, and buckle up.
Hales at ringside in Louisville Gardens in Louisville, Kentucky, and Buddy Landell picked up with the aid of Dundee that belt from Coco. Okay, Davey.
All right, this is going to be a one-fall, 15-minute time limit match. Introducing from parts unknown at 208 pounds, the Masked Patriot. And going against him from Union City, Tennessee, 222 pounds, Coco Ware. This match will be one-fall, 15-minute time limit. Referee Jerry Calhoun.
Double time. We're off and running with the Masked Patriot. First look at him going against Coco.
All right. So the Masked Patriot got in one shot in the corner, and Coco was basically like, Mr. No. Miyagi, enough.
He went,
all right. So I just got to let this run through, and I just want to get your real-time reaction to what you're seeing.
Okay.
Coco Ware and Coco kind of going at it. Oh. Boy, he is mounting and swinging.
Oh, my God. Holy shit. What the fuck?
Lemon away. Caught him with a clothesline. You can't. Oh, Coco Ware just ripping the Masked Patriot off.
Oh, my God. He's beating really the bag out of him.
Coco was able to see any of that tape or not, but if he was.
He's lay it in, Coco. Lay it in. Really.
Jesus Christ. This poor guy got paid double to. Oh my God! He's beating him like friggin' Inoki beat that guy. Great Suzuki. Yeah.
The great Antonio, yeah.
Great Antonio. Holy shit. All
right, here we go. Ghostbuster.
Going as we have ever seen him. With a Patriot.
That was all right. Oh, with the knee on his. Oh my God! What the fuck, Coco? That is not the bird, man.
And then he just hops out of the ring. He's looking back, and he is.
Oh, my God. Yeah, something happened.
That man had a family.
Let's pause this so we can break this down. That man had a family. He beat him like a scalded dog. Jesus Christ. I mean, I think the worst was like, yeah, he was late. First of all, He's slapping him, and you hear like just like those kind of slaps where it's
and it's not know, a it, like, he ain't slapping his thigh either. No. I can tell you that.
And then when he hits him with the clothesline, dude, it's like it's like a friggin' JBL lariat. Like he hits him like, oh, it was gross. Like when Akeem hit friggin' Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania.
I believe he irritated Coco.
Man. And then just, yeah, I mean, the Ghostbuster was okay, because, I mean, that was, you could tell he's protecting him, you know?
Yeah, but yeah.
It was, as soon as I saw him go off of the Ghostbuster, I went, oh, shit, is he just going to drop him on his head? Like, but he did protect him, which was nice. Thank you, Coco. But, yeah. Damn, I've never seen Coco Beware act like that before. Holy shit.
Oh, he going to beat the shit out of a motherfucker every so often.
Like I said, that's not the bird man that was doing jobs for, you know, 20 years in the WWF.
Well, just think, he's nearing the end of his Memphis run here. He goes to UWF for pretty much like the summer, mm-hmm. and then ends up in WWF like the end of August, actually, because yeah. he's on the first Superstars in a bizarre teaming with Paul Roma against the Hart Foundation. It feels like a really weird way mm-hmm. to roll out Coco Beware. But yeah, that was Coco Beware versus the Masked Patriot is a match that happened.
It's a thing that we watched.
And the Masked Patriot got brutalized. No confirmation that the Masked Patriot was actually Irving Fryer. It was Tony Eason.
It was Tony Eason. Dude, there's a lot of ref bumps in this tape.
Oh yeah. I mean, this is Memphis. They didn't abide by like conventional rules. There's more than a little bit of Memphis in the Attitude Era of WWF. The only catch is the Memphis stuff holds up better, I think.
Yeah.
I know we, I know we just saw this, but
yeah,
I think,
why are we watching this again?
I think it's to kick off a Bill Dundee music video, or at least that's what my rundown says. I was working hard on the rundown. No, they're not going to play Tell Me Lies. It's actually going to be a completely different song that you'll recognize. All right, here's the music video for Dundee.
Oh, hey now.
Now remember, Dundee's a heel, so. But he's also like the top guy, so yeah, he's entitled to a music video. And this is how you do it. None of that tell me a lie bullshit.
No. Although this is, I have to be honest, this is one of my like least favorite songs because it is just so overplayed.
Yeah, it is a little, yeah. I'd say. Ooh. Dundee's beating up. Dundee is skinning Skinner.
Hey.
The other interesting thing about Dundee is he was certainly not a tall man. In fact, he's noticeably short. But in Memphis, that didn't matter. I know you're just waiting for this song to end because you don't like it.
Oh, that's fine. I get. Oh my God! Look at a little dust in the eye. A little powder.
He threw cocaine in his eyes. What a waste.
Or maybe it wasn't a waste. Looks like he's getting a lot of pops here. A lot of people like him. Bill Dundee, well, the original Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I think that... here's Landell.
She was a magician, can you believe it? I'm driving down the road, she rubs me on the leg, and I turn into a motel. Get it?
Okay. I think there's probably, you know, some Memphis fans who are pro Dundee and anti Lawler. It's kind of like Coke and Pepsi. Who do you choose? Who do you get behind? I'm sure that there are probably people who liked both Lawler and Dundee, but it's probably one or the other, right?
I was gonna say Hogan and Savage.
Yeah, and Lawler would probably be the Hogan in that case, and Dundee would be Savage, but I think it's more complicated than that. So,
that's
Buddy Landell,
interesting looking championship.
Yeah, it's like perfect. It's like a perfect rectangle. Buddy Landell and Dutch Mantell, which rhymes with each other, I guess, against Billy Travis and Tracy Smothers.
Oh,
yeah. Tracy Smothers passed away in 2020.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, is Dutch the only person alive from this match? Because I don't know if Billy Travis is in jail or what his deal is.
Why would Billy Travis be in jail?
Well, let me put it to you this way: Billy Travis was arrested on a live edition of USWA Wrestling, so I wouldn't put anything. I think Billy Travis is deceased. And I know that it's great podcasting for me to just ruminate about these things without knowing for sure. But yeah, Billy Travis died in 2002, so he's been gone for quite a while. So Dutch Mantell is the only living person from this match.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah. But then again, you could pretty much put on any mid-1980s wrestling tape and become depressed by really thinking about that.
Yeah. That is unfortunate. It happens way too often that you're watching, you know, you're watching wrestling and then you go, good Lord, everybody in that match is dead.
I don't understand why Dutch Mantell decided to wear a sweater as part of his ring gear. Oh, wait, that's just his body hair. Sorry.
You know what's depressing is watching the Intercontinental Championship match at WrestleMania 7 because you realize Perfect is gone, Boss Man is gone, Joey Morella is gone, Bobby Heenan is gone, Andre the Giant is gone. But then Haku and Barbarian come out and you're all right.
I thought you were also going to point out Gorilla and Lord Al, who were calling the match.
Gorilla's gone. Lord Al.
What? But then, are you surprised that Haku and the Barbarian outlasted everybody? I mean, that's pretty much par for the course.
Well, we know that what's going to finally kill one of either Haku or Chuck Norris. One of them is going to kill the other.
No, I think Haku and Chuck Norris are going to die on the same day, like Adams and Jefferson. And one of them is going to be like, I just wish I could have outlived the other, when he doesn't know that the other died two hours earlier.
Chuck Norris is going to look at his grandchildren and go, Haku lives.
Dutch
and then Haku's going to look up and he's going to go, what about Barbarian?
Sione.
What about Sione?
Yeah. We don't know which spelling to use, but I know it's pronounced Sione.
Bosco. Yeah. maybe I should change my ATM pin to Sione.
Yeah, nobody would be able to guess amongst the three different spellings. Oh, nice standing drop kick by Landell. Oh, Landell's wearing one knee pad. You notice that? No, I think there's a certain code. Yeah. Buddy Landell had a code with his knee pads. If he was wearing both of them, he was there to work. Oh. If he didn't have one on, if he didn't have any knee pads on, it meant Buddy's not bumping today. Mm-hmm. And if he had one on, that means that he got laid the night before and he left that knee pad at the woman's place. No, I'm totally serious. You think I'm telling a joke, but that is what I've heard.
He left that knee pad in the woman.
That's some really kinky stuff. Yeah.
He was a kinky kind of guy.
Yeah.
He was into Lord Al kink.
Well, as Lance just said, 3 minutes and 56 seconds. They let these matches go a little bit longer. Well, except for Coco and the Masked Patriot. That was just I don't know how long that was, but it was under 2 minutes.
Geez, this is the first time in a long time I've seen a match where a champion is wrestling and he doesn't get pinned in a non-title match.
Oh. The Ultimate Warrior has pinned the Intercontinental Champion. This guy's hair is just unbelievable. Like,
yeah, this guy's amazing.
Well, I don't know if he's amazing. I mean, he's reading cards and he's looking down. Looking down on camera is not exactly the greatest look, but we get Dirty Rhodes. So let's see if he's looking for Sapphire.
You're going to see a war. You talk about misinformed. I heard Dundee and Mantell, I didn't run their mouth. But the score of the Bears game was 46-10, if that matters. But I'm going to tell you something, brother. We're not misinformed. It's just sticking my nose in business. Bill Dundee, you come down there and start that whole mess, brother. Lantell, Mandel, you're going to have to finish it, brother. You got to play blood for blood. Yeah, you got something for me. Now you got to give it up Wednesday night in Evansville. Rick, tell him, baby.
That's right. Wednesday night in Evansville, things are going to get wild. Now, you bleach blonde imitation stuck your nose in somebody else's business, and now you're going to have to pay. You guys are tough when there's six of you.
Bleach blonde imitation? You're standing across from a guy who calls himself Dirty Rhodes.
Hold on a minute. Are you fucking serious? Bleach blonde imitation? Are you fucking serious?
Well, I yeah.
Continue.
Okay, so now we go to Austin Idol, which, because he's kind of the Lawler proxy at this point, fighting off Dundee and that whole gang. And however, his hair is not looking really good at this point.
No.
There's very little that Austin Idol does without receiving pay for. But I'm going to make one exception, and only one exception. I want you to take a good look what this says on this blackboard. You don't have to be an Einstein to read it. It says D-Day.
I'm glad to see this must be where Dean Douglas got his gimmick from with the chalkboard and everything.
I thought it was going to say ABC, always be closing.
A-I-A.
Always be closing. You know what it takes to work in CWA? It takes brass balls to work in CWA.
We got... All right, Pete, compose yourself. Yeah.
And the D stands for Dundee. You see, Dundee, you...
Mono means one, and rail means rail. And that concludes our six-week intensive course.
The D stands for Dundee. He should have spelled out the D stands for Dundee. The other D stands for D, as in day.
The only... He's writing the names of his favorite Animal House characters on the board there. He only likes D-Day. He doesn't like Flounder.
He flips it on the side and says Pinto.
the mayor's daughter.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, Jerry Lawler something, but Lawler can't collect. So dang. I'm going to be the dude that does the collecting. And believe me, when I say I'm going to collect, Jack, I'm going to collect. Because, you see, you put a good friend of mine out of wrestling. And you're costing me money, too, because now I don't have half of the AWA Southern Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. D for Dundee. D for destroy. D for destruct. D for demise. I'm going to wipe you out, Jack. It doesn't make any difference where it is, but when we lock up, I'm going to kick your butt all over that arena.
Okay.
Okay, let's get them back in here. Here they come right now.
So it appears we do have one more match.
Same song, second verse, Buddy Landell.
Wait, did we just see this? I'm very confused here.
Is this a 2 out of 3 falls match?
All right, can we watch this close to make sure that we're not watching the same thing as we just did? Yeah, I'm very puzzled that this is a 2 out of 3 falls match. Should I just fast forward to see where this goes?
You're the man. You do what you need.
You know what? I'm just gonna let this roll and see if it actually is a different match.
No, it is, because there Lance Russell's talking about it being, you know, I think it's a 2 out of 3 falls match. Either that or they just said no. The last match ended in kind of a screwy finish, so we're gonna redo this.
Oh. He may get his wish here. Billy Travis, fine young wrestler. Yeah. You know what? I'm willing to accept this.
Sure.
I did think it was strange that the video was 51 minutes because that's kind of an odd number. Usually, if the commercials are there, it's a full hour. But if the commercials aren't there, it's about 44 minutes.
He was in there for a
while. You know, you can get some quirky things that happen in these videos sometimes.
We can talk about Austin Idol for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
He never really did much, like, he never made it to, like, WWF or...
I think he did as, like, a very, very briefly in, like, 80 or 81, but I don't think New York territory was for him for whatever reason. I think his name was McCord.
What about, like, he never went to, like, Crockett either, huh?
I think, like a lot of Memphis guys, he was a bit flaky and liked working there the best because, you know, for any number of different reasons.
They all lived in Memphis.
Austin Idol was also known as Mike McCord and also Dennis McCord, but I think he went by Mike McCord during... I want to say he had a few matches in WF in, like, 1980. Okay, there's one match at MSG in February of 1980, but he's there as Austin Idol. So, I don't know, man. Maybe I should just do the lookup for all years World Wrestling Federation or World Wrestling Entertainment. Okay. So this is actually more interesting. He was in there. I had the time frame wrong. He was Mike McCord in Worldwide Wrestling Federation in 1973 and early 74.
Oh.
So that definitely predates, you know, our era. And I don't think I've seen very much in the way of footage of that era outside of the occasional MSG show.
Yeah.
And I have to confess, I don't really go out of my way to watch a lot of 70s wrestling because it's not something that I'm doing a lot on the podcast, although I am on the main podcast proper this week doing a championship wrestling show from 78, which I haven't done before.
Hair, referee, hair. Okay.
How does Dutch, like, grow that much body hair? Was it like a Jerry Seinfeld situation where he was shaving it at one point and it just started growing in thicker and thicker?
I can't stop!
He gets out of Kramer's bus. Woo!
Oh, that's just an old wives' tale. Is it?
Is it?
Ladies, Gillette. Oh, come on. Yeah, but it's funny because his chest is not that hairy. It's his back. It's his back and his, like, upper shoulders. Like, he's, oof. Yeah. That's awful. Ugh.
Well, somebody probably should have had a talk with him at some point.
I'm sure a lot of people had talks with him.
All right, so now Smothers trying to get in there after Landell. It has a very Smoky Mountain Wrestling 1995 feel to it.
Oh, boy, here comes Jim Cornette.
Cornette's time in Memphis had long since come to an end by this time.
I'll just motherfuck every word, every other word. Here's motherfucking Landell with motherfucking Dutch Mantel.
I don't have a problem with Cornette per se. It's just that I don't really need his voice in my life all the time.
No.
But I certainly appreciate his body of work in the 80s.
So, you know, I think I had said something to you earlier, like a while ago, about how every video on YouTube when Cornette's talking, he clears his voice, he clears his throat, and he makes this loud like that. And I actually put that on a comment on one of the videos when I go, why does Cornette constantly clear his throat in every friggin' interview? And somebody responded that, like, he had ulcers and that he had surgery and that's like probably just an after effect of his ulcers. And they're like, that's why he doesn't drink Mountain Dew anymore. And then I kind of felt bad. I was like,
oh, yeah, you've got yourself into trouble between that and the Challenger. Although I think I bailed you out on that Challenger thing because you were laughing that I brought it up and you were not.
This is true.
By the way, if you want to watch something interesting on Netflix, there is a documentary on the Challenger thing. I think it's a 4-episode deal. I watched it probably about a month or two ago.
Yeah.
And I knew a lot about the Challenger disaster and those O-rings that basically went wrong and caused the thing to explode. But there was a lot of good information and how NASA internal pressures of that led to that entire thing happening.
Ooh. Oh, okay. I'm a big fan of anything NASA related. So, I mean, that definitely, I'll check that out. Do you know that I watched with my brother and my nephew, Apollo 13 recently.
Oh, yeah.
And my brother had no idea like what that was all about. And so I had to explain to them, cause after watching Apollo 13 years ago, I went and did like a lot of reading about it and stuff. Cause again, anything NASA related is very interesting to me. And I was explaining to them all about it. And my brother goes, wow. So those guys almost died, huh? I was like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, they almost died.
I feel bad.
Several times, I think.
I feel bad for the dudes on Apollo 12. It's like on 11, they're the first ones on the moon. At 13, they're the ones who recover from this thing where it looked like they were going to die. But like 12, they went to the moon and back, you know, completely uneventful.
Nobody gave a shit.
So it looks like if it was a 2 out of 3 falls, Tracy lost the second fall, figure 4. By Landell. We're down to a minute to go in this video. it's just that this match was not listed as 2 out of 3 falls on the description, but that's okay. Oh, it was not figure four. It was the twisting corkscrew elbow that Landell would do.
Today, I'm going to tell you, I love that last match. I mean, that's not to say I love to see Travis and Smothers got beat. They got beat by a better team, as a matter of fact.
That's true.
It was a good, experienced team against a relatively inexperienced young team, and good action all the way.
Good, tough match. And also, Tony Falk, a loser.
And that's how you put over a team that lost 2 straight falls, the way that Lance Russell just did it, is like the perfect tone of doing that.
Bye-bye, everybody.
The announcers on this program are selected and paid by parties other than this station, namely the promoters of Championship Wrestling.
That's just like GFA Live.
That's right. I like there was a Greco-Roman statue that they showed at the end of this tape.
Yeah, I don't pay you very much. I pay you in pictures of dudes from Karate Kid 2. Which brings us to our next segment.
I would say you pay me in friendship, Pete.
Thank you. So, Keithy and Pete go to the movies. Is that what we've? Is that what we've? Yes.
Okay.
So I'll flip over here. Now, through the last many months of this podcast, we have been concluding by looking at a scene from the 1986 feature film, The Karate Kid Part 2, which I felt was very well timed, considering it. You know, that movie and how it was alluded to in season 3 of Cobra Kai.
And yes,
I want to say we've covered probably about 8 different scenes in this movie. Today we see Miyagi and Daniel, and they are walking through Tomy Village, the land that time forgot. And they are walking to the cannery. And this is the point. This is like the screenshot that I have on there. It's just walk down like a ramp thing, and this is where Daniel is wearing the flood pants.
Yes.
For where my friend Mike in college said, "Hey Daniel, where's the flood?" And it caused me to laugh so hard I almost pissed my pants.
He's also wearing it looks like the sandals, but if you remember, this is the outfit he wears, I think, for the majority of the Karate Kid 2 video game that you play for Nintendo.
Oh. You know what? I should rescue. You know, I should bring the Nintendo home from my mother's house later today, and then buy the Karate Kid Part 2 game and see if I can beat it. Okay. All right, so let's play this and because they're having a conversation about like the village itself and everything.
You know, I don't get something. If Sato hates you so much, why does he give you time to mourn?
My father was his teacher. Inside the heart, Sato still know right from wrong.
But he still wants to kill you.
Sometime what heart know.
Look at Kumiko walking past, checking out Daniel's butt. Did you notice that?
I didn't. Go back. Let me see. That's Kumiko?
I think it is. Yeah.
Still know right from wrong.
Let's look.
But he still wants.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Look at that. Oh, she's checking out his ass. His cute little ass.
Oh yeah.
His cute little jersey ass.
To kill you.
Sometime what heart know, head forget.
Yeah, but the guy's looking to go to war. I don't understand.
Oh, she looked back twice.
Taking part in one.
Yeah. No, but what if he threw that punch over there? What would you have done?
Block.
You think you could have?
Even you could have.
I always like when Miyagi is dismissive of Daniel's abilities. It's kind of like when Alex Trebek would make fun of a contestant on Jeopardy. It's like one of those delightful moments, like, even you could have.
Even you could have, Daniel.
You giant
Jesus Christ,
pussy.
The guy's 75 years old, Daniel. You don't think you could have blocked his punch? He's been trying to break a piece of wood for the last 45 years.
His hands are, he's got crippling arthritis.
He's got banker's hands. He's been holding money his whole life.
I'm not that strong.
Not matter who's stronger, matter who's smarter.
I guess that's why I won the tournament.
Good guess.
All of a sudden they're in Vietnam. the drunk
technique. Yagi father always say, best way to avoid punch, no be there.
I don't get it.
Miyagi.
How does he not get that? It's like the simplest fucking thing. I don't get it.
How you don't get arrested, Daniel? Don't show up to the friggin' bank robbery. Stay home that day.
Dude, I work here. Miyagi, first job, work for Sato Fada. One day, Miyagi mind on something other than fish when empty net returned.
You know what his mind was on, right?
Well, yeah. What, avoiding a giant metal spike that comes flying down?
Nope, his mind was on something else that day. It wasn't on fish, but it was on something that smells like fish.
Oh, come on. Come on. I'm gonna have you taken out of here. So Miyagi, he pulled a rope and this giant, like, sling blade thing fucking comes Jesus down.
This giant friggin' scythe comes down. Like the friggin' Grim Reaper.
And he gets out of the way. But of course, because Miyagi, all he does is provide these lessons.
Constantly life lessons.
Oh, that was a little close.
Drum technique, understand?
Oh, yeah.
No,
drum technique.
Yeah, let me try.
Yeah, he doesn't want to let him. He doesn't want to let him try.
Just one turn. Please.
Okay, come platform.
It would really be something if he got impaled by it. And Daniel's mother's like, "What happened? What's going on?" Oh, yeah, I let go of this thing at the cannery, and it like went right through his heart.
No, what he says is he goes. She says, "What happened?" And Miyagi just goes, "Drum technique." What? What are you talking about? Drum technique.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry. Drum technique. His mind was on something else.
I will pull up hook.
Now he's telling him he's going to go pull up the hook. He hasn't even shown Daniel like how to properly do the drum technique yet.
No, he really hasn't.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it.
But Miyagi's smart. He's going to put that weird cork thing on the end of it.
Yeah. Only on one end, I might add.
Well, it only has to be on one end, I think, because it's the one that's going to be heading right towards Daniel.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen like a kind of like a double-ended spear, but like sometimes it can roll around.
Well, yeah.
What about if that cork thing had bounced off of the thing and come back and hit Daniel in the back?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's trying to kill Daniel right here.
Remember, last block. No be there.
Okay.
One, two, three.
Good thing he doesn't have a cell phone in his pocket.
Mm.
Daniel wrecks his iPhone diving into the Okinawan waters.
Daniel-san, you all right?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Come, not for today. Try again tomorrow.
I don't think Daniel even tried.
No. I think it came down way faster than he thought it was going to, and that's why he wasn't prepared. Like, not in the least.
I like how Miyagi hasn't done that drum technique in, like, what, 50 years, and he knew it immediately? Like, talk about no ring rust on Miyagi.
Miyagi is like Ricky Steamboat at WrestleMania 25. You still got it.
Unlike The Rock, when The Rock wrestled John Cena.
Well, yeah. Hey, he tore his pectoral. That was WrestleMania 29, when The Rock tore his pectoral muscle like 3 minutes into the match. But it's like, oh, yes. We got to go 28 minutes because that's the way we do things here.
Right.
So Miyagi's climbing down, and he's imparting a life story once again.
Okay.
Yeah. Remember, like it was yesterday. Hopping over a load of fresh mackerel.
So he brings down one of the metal hooks that's uncovered, and
He gets out of the way, stays on the platform, but it tears through his shirt, and he's looking at it like, huh?
Yeah, he's lucky. He almost died, but that's okay. He's not even phased.
Hey, when you have karate gangs chasing you around in high school, trying to kill you the entire time, you know, something like that's not going to phase you all that much.
Yes.
Daniel, son, you all right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was pretty stupid.
I'm sorry. I had to pause it on me. The look on Miyagi's face as he's like, yeah, you're damn fucking right. It's stupid.
You fucking idiot. Daniel, you dumb asshole. Miyagi said that to father when same thing happened. Father agreed he was stupid. Father was right.
Hey, is there a counterpunch in the technique?
Ask drum.
See, that's why I go to my drum and I ask it questions all the time.
ask a drum.
Mm.
What happened to my son? What happened to him? Ask a drum.
So now Daniel's just kind of on the platform like, how am I supposed to do this again?
Trying to ask the drum. Oh, and we hear the sound of the drum in the background.
Talk to drum later.
Now, does Daniel, and that's the scene, but does Daniel throw away that shirt, or does that shirt reappear later? I can't remember.
I think he gives it to Kumiko.
For her collection?
Yeah.
I know you like it. I'm still so mad that when I gave you that picture of Chosen, I wasn't scripting the thing, but I had made a mental note to say when you pulled it out, you saw what it was for me to go, you keep for your collection. I know you like it.
Ah, yes.
You keep not talking.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. Well, you know. What can I really say, huh?
We got down, we got up, we got funky, and we got bad.
Indeed we did.
We sure did. Thanks, Cal.
We're back on the Karate Kid 2 train. We covered an episode of Memphis Wrestling that had quite a bit going on. Legal challenges, off-spec Dusty Rhodes, Coco just brutalizing some guy under a mask.
I think I might start calling Dusty Rhodes off-spec Dirty Rhodes.
Ooh, challenge! No, don't say that because I'm gonna announce once again. I plan on selling my wrestling figures and I expect top dollar for the Dusty Rhodes one.
Very good.
Yeah, because it's not because I don't appreciate having these wrestling figures. I think it's just that people would appreciate it more than me. It's not like I'm gonna take $3 for them, but
no,
you know, eventually I'll organize them, roll that out, itemize, and you know, take the full inventory. Some of them don't have the accessories, so obviously those would be discounted. But thank you, Keithy, for joining me this morning. This has definitely lifted my spirits.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for having me. I always enjoy our conversations.
Yeah, and I know that coming up on GFA Live, it may be next week, it might be the week after, but we do plan on covering Inside the Steel Cage from Coliseum Video, which has a whole lot of Lord Al. And I know it's got a match that you definitely want to see, which is Tito winning the Intercontinental title back from Greg Valentine in July of 85. So
yeah. Absolutely. I'm going to have to hit up the Urban Dictionary to get some sexual, you know, performances that I can do in my Lord Al voice.
Oh, well, you work on that. And for all you listeners, if you can, please leave a 5-star review for Greetings from Allentown, GFA Live on Apple Podcasts. River Fine Podcast reviews are accepted because it provides the social proof that we so desperately need. In our position at this time in January of 2021. And tune in next time for another exciting episode of GFA Live.
drum.